You're watching Press TV, everyone. Live to New York now to a press conference by Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
We believe that the media, that the independent media and free thoughts and justice seekers can and must take the first step and be the cannon fodders of this change. This change from this capitalist unilateral warmongering world to a world full of justice, love, and brotherhood. I thank you all and am ready to take your questions. In the name of God. As per the tradition of the UN press conferences, is Mr. Thunpoen from the German press.
Mr. President, thank you very much for this press conference. Do you know that many people in New York really do not welcome you back here, because whatever you make remarks, it upset and shocked a lot of people. And your remarks yesterday...
That's what...
Aaron, we apologize for the technical problem there. You're looking at live images of a news conference in New York by the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. We were listening halfway through to a question by one of the journalists present there in that news conference. I'm afraid, okay, I'm being told that we got him back now. Let's catch the rest of the news conference.
You have the text. It's all right if you choose to read the text. You said that you have the text. You don't have the text of my speech? What I raised is a very clear discussion and a precise one. An event occurred. And under the pretext of that event, two countries were invaded, and up till now, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed as a result. Don't you think that that excuse needs to be revised? Don't you feel that if a fact-finding mission was present from the start to explore the true reason behind September 11, that we would not see the catastrophes in Afghanistan and Iraq today? Why do you assume that all nations must accept what the U.S. government tells them? There are three theories regarding it, and I said that I do not wish to make any judgment at all myself. You can walk on the street here and ask the people of New York about September 11, and you will see that everyone will at some point bring up one, if not all, of those three theories. I did not pass a judgment, but don't you feel that the time's come to have a fact-finding committee, because hundreds of thousands of people have died as a result of that event and still continue to be killed. I'm surprised that you think that you can speak representing the people of New York. The people of New York are kind. They are very good people, and we care about them. And we are trying to defend the rights of the American people here, in fact, so that their money is not used for killing people in Iraq and Afghanistan, so that their children do not end up in locations where they do not understand and must not go to in the first place to die. Do you think that these are bad statements to make? And why should you be upset over it? Now, of course, the U.S. government, if it's upset, yeah, I can see why. It should, because the U.S. government expects everyone to follow it and to follow its decisions. But I do not feel that the opinions of the people of New York is what you have stated. The people of New York are friendly people, are realistic people, and almost in all the polls, over 80% of the American people consider the 9/11 tragedy a suspicious one. And in terms of the event was a suspicious event. So I do not wish to pass a judgment. I simply try to offer a proposal for a humane solution to the problems that have risen as a result of 9/11. We are saddened by the fact that people were killed in 9/11. We have expressed our sympathy and solidarity with the victims and their relatives, but we also want to bring to your attention that hundreds of thousands of people in our region, innocent people, were killed as a result of 9/11. So I think that it's best if we allow everyone to speak for themselves. I hope that there will be an opportunity where people in New York will be able to speak more about their opinions on this as well, because most of the major media in the United States reflects views that is completely in coordination with the U.S. State Department's views. So we hope that there will be opportunities to allow the American people to freely express what they think.
آقای علی البراد.
السلام علیکم مستر پرزیدنت اند ثانک یو. Every time come to the UN you give exclusive interviews to the corporate media المستكبرين which you are always attacking, and you exclude the most vulnerable media المستضعفين which you are always defending. And would you please give us an explanation for that, and what's your message in when you visit Lebanon, especially regarding the special tribunal for Lebanon? Thank you.
خیلی متشکرم. نه ما مصاحبه‌های گوناگونی داریم با رسانه‌های.
Thank you very much. We have interviews with many different media. Some of them belong to the corporate and are in a way related to the US government. But we do speak to other independent media from different countries. And I've spoken to the Lebanese media before, and I will again. And we like you. Like all others. God willing, I shall be traveling to Lebanon. Iran and Lebanon have very amicable relations and brotherly relations. We like unity and progress of Lebanon, and we believe that all in Lebanon must join hands and keep the independence of Lebanon, its advancement and progress, its security. Lebanon has many enemies because It has stood against the aggression of the Zionists, and for the first time in 6 decades imposed a major defeat on the Zionist regime. Many people are upset and are trying to break the security and the unity in Lebanon. And anyone who likes Lebanon must help its unity and its security and its progress. I carry messages of friendship for the Lebanese nation, and about the court case, I believe that the best qualified people are the Lebanese people to make a decision on this case. We will not interfere in Lebanese domestic affairs and will not have such interferences.
از تلویزیون ایتالیا خانم الیساندرا کاپتی.
Miss Alessandra Capetti from Italian television.
Italy is the first trade partner of Iran, and yesterday USA and the United Nations opened the door of a dialogue. We believe that you try to close it, and within the European communities, which is the country that you could reopen the negotiation, and do you think Italy could be one of these?
Thank you very much for your question. We are always prepared to talk. You know, the recent resolution that was issued was during negotiations and dialogue. The U.S. President asked the Brazilian President and the Prime Minister of Turkey to hold dialogue with Iran and to find a way to exchange nuclear fuel. And we accepted, and a very good dialogue was done. And the Tehran Declaration, which was a very, very constructive dialogue, and was issued. It was done within the framework of justice and law. But unfortunately, while Iran and Brazil and Turkey, the issue of the were pursuing the issue of the declaration and were busy with talks with other countries, the resolutions against Iran were issued. Nowadays, everybody has become aware that there is an abnormal behavior from certain countries. The same image that those had during the colonial era, some people still possess. They said they issued the resolution to place Iran under pressure so that Iran is forced to accept their opinions. This is terrible. They want the result of the dialogue to be set from before. We have to accept whatever they say, even if their opinions and their views are unlawful and unjust. We won't accept this. Nobody will accept this. But the way to negotiations is open, and the doors are open to dialogue. Dialogue in the framework of justice and mutual respect. If anybody thinks that they can use force to destroy Iranian people's rights, they're making a big mistake. We've always been ready for dialogues in the framework of justice and law, and we're still prepared today.
I apologize of my colleague that I ask my question in Farsi.
Mr. President, when you were giving your speech at the General Assembly of the UN, some US and European diplomats left the room, and some media like the CNN had direct people around the world would like to know the facts. How do you explain this? Another reporter also mentioned this in a different manner. Some people think they are the whole world and have no respect for other nations. A few European countries who chant slogans of freedom of thought and tolerance and free information, whose cries of these has deafened the world, are not even prepared to listen to a single point of view that opposes whatever they are saying. We're not saying accept it. They just don't want to listen. Well, they have written themselves off, and it shows that they are a minority that is on their way out. They believe they own the world, and they believe that they speak for the world, and they decide and say the international community says this, and the nations are upset, or the people of America are upset, or people of Europe are upset. No, that's not true. They are a minority in their own countries. And if there were truly free elections in their own countries, it is not by any means clear whether they would garner enough votes and support. This does not answer the questions any longer. Some people want to force their opinion down other people's throats through publicity, but that era is at an end, just like freewheeling capitalism is at an end. This prejudiced behavior, which has come about through capitalist thought, will end also. As a matter of fact, only a few people exited the General Assembly, and the majority stayed, and many countries representative stayed, and they listened, and of course they will have their own judgments. We won't impose our views on other people, but they are not even prepared at the United Nations, which must be the freest part and the most democratic part in the world. They're not even willing to hear a single word in opposition there, and then go and make their own decisions. This is the capitalist dictatorial thought, and it's at the end of the road. This is not important for us, and we're not particularly sensitive to it. Because you asked the question, I tried to explain.
Assalamu alaikum, Mr. President. Good to see you every year here in New York. I'd just like to go back to my colleague's question on your statements yesterday about 9/11, sir. And again, you're repeating here saying that the majority of Americans believe that it's a conspiracy, that the U.S. government, in your speech, which I read very well, you said that it's a conspiracy which the U.S. government made to justify its wars and to help Zionism. But I've been living here for about 8 years now, and I've never seen a poll or an opinion poll saying that the majority of Americans hold this point of view. Maybe 5%, I don't know the percent, but it's definitely not the majority. But my question, sir, is why now? I mean, why after 9 years are you making this an issue in your speech while you had many other topics which many people would have wanted to know your point of view about? Why this topic right now when you have that so many people are waiting for any statement to make a big issue out of? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your patience for me to say something else.
You see,
if 3 years ago I'd said something about 9/11, it would have been the same. Even if he said it 5 years ago, it would have been the same. Of course, I've said this before, in the first year that I traveled to New York, that why should there not be a probe into the 9/11 attacks. After all, if 10, 20, 50 people are responsible for an atrocity, we should find them out, seek them out, and punish them, and punish those responsible. But it can't be that the whole of the Middle East be introduced to the world as terrorists, and their livelihoods and their property become uncredible. You know, they go to Afghanistan and bomb a wedding and kill 70 people, bomb an entire village, and say one terrorist has gone into this village. Who is this terrorist, if you're telling the truth? What's his name? Who are they? And recently, they're bombing Pakistan. What's going on? How many terrorists are there? Where are they? Wasn't 9 or 10 years enough? How many thousands of NATO forces have been killed? About 5,000 American soldiers have been killed. Is this a good thing? When we say the policy, when we say a wrong policy has to be reformed, is it bad? Are we saying the bad or wrong thing? It's clear that their policies were wrong. And we are following our policies from what we got from the 9/11 events. And we have got evidence. They said that we've got evidence from 9/11 atrocities that these terrorists are in Iraq and Afghanistan, so we have to go and occupy them. Now that it's clear that they followed the wrong policies, should they not reconsider their earlier claims? Maybe the terrorists are elsewhere. Perhaps there were the wrong number of people. Perhaps the people they're calling terrorists are a few million people. Well, we have to change the methods. If they don't want to hear us, we don't expect the U.S. statement to listen to us. Well, but if they don't do this, will there be an exit strategy from Iraq and Afghanistan for them? Is there anyone answerable to why so many people have been killed? Who's going to answer it? We've proposed the road ahead to the UN and the US government to find an ending to the wars in Afghanistan and Pakistan. This is assistance. This isn't negative. A committee should come along that might represent the facts in a different way and might come by different facts and allow the people of Afghanistan to govern themselves. And if they're if they're sympathizing with the people of Afghanistan, instead of money for bombs and missiles, they should pay that money toward the reconstruction of Afghanistan. I'm worried that in a few years' time, the 9/11 events becomes transmuted into another holy issue that nobody is allowed to touch, so that nobody can put it right. Many books have been written in the U.S. that does not confirm your views. And different polls that have been issued, and various media by U.S. universities, various polls by U.S. universities have found that not everybody shares your view. We can't transmute everything into a black box. And if it is a black box, well, at least a few experts should open the black box and find out what exactly went on.
Go into trouble in these two countries if they go too deep in their relationship with the new situation.
You see, we believe that the people of Afghanistan and Iraq can govern themselves and do not need interference from anybody. Certain group of people must not imagine that people of Iraq and Afghanistan need trustees. they can govern themselves. Of course, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran have historical relations, and they are in the same area of civilization. Something like 3 million Afghan people live in Iran, and they are friends. It is wrong when they say if we exit Iraq and Afghanistan, Iran will take our place. This is an insult to the peoples of these two countries. Iran does not want to take the place of occupiers because it is such an awful place that the occupiers have left, that nobody would want to replace it and replace the shame. We have friendly relations with these two countries and we will continue it. They should let the political due processes to become whole and entire in both countries, the statesmen become able to run their own countries, and we'll help them along. But if anyone wants to assist the Afghanistan people, they have to go to the Afghan governments. They shouldn't go and occupy the place. So assistance is helping their own governments. That's what you call help.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to follow up on what you were saying about talks with the P5 plus one, and also about some of your comments this week about talking with the United States. I understand what you're saying about principles of justice and fairness, but I think that the UN, you and the P5 plus one and the United States have kind of been talking past each other. The U.S. and their group think that you want to get together for talks, and they say that they've invited Iran for talks, but that, and they feel you want to talk, but that you haven't set a date for talks, and this is what they're looking for. Can you commit today that you will sit down with them for talks, and could you lay out exactly, beyond the principles of fairness and justice, what it would take for you to get to talks? You also appointed a special envoy for Afghanistan. This is seen as one area that you and the U.S. have cooperated in the past and can start cooperating again. Are you interested in talking with the United States about stabilizing Afghanistan? Thank you.
Thank you very much. According to our planning, probably in October, the Iranian representative will talk to the P5 plus one about the framework for dialogues. This has been prepared from before, and that's what they wanted, and we've been prepared all along, and we've always been prepared to talk. But in the middle of the previous talks, they issued a resolution and stopped talking. But this isn't the first time they've done this. Every time they come short on logic, they do this. But still, we're prepared to talk, and we've declared the conditions for talks.
Will you ask, will you send a note to Catherine Ashton, the representative from the EU, to actually set a date for this talks? I think the P5 plus one is looking to have talks as early as possible, perhaps next month. Do you see that on the cards?
I believe that Ms. Ashton, if she contacts the Iranian representative, can decide on a time for dialogue. Mr. Darabi from Irna. In the name of God. Yesterday, Mr. Obama said during the General Assembly speech, again talked about negotiations with Iran and said the door was open, whereas he didn't declare whether what he meant to do during these negotiations. and all Western media all said in one voice that it would be in the U.S. interest to talk to Iran and befriend Iran. What do you think about this? We've said many times before, other than the Zionist regime, we like to have good relations with all governments. The U.S. government cut its relations with us on its own. The U.S. government cut its relations with us. Well, what are we supposed to do? We believe we're not responsible in such scenario. And today that they want to talk, they have to fix their literature and come and talk from a just point of view, a brotherly point of view, so the opportunity is provided for dialogue. We've already had a chat in Iraq to help the political process there, but the U.S. government unilaterally cut those off as well. We're not sure our dialogue with the U.S. About Afghanistan could be positive. If they show conditions and provide the opportunities and that they are prepared to accept the facts in Afghanistan, then we can talk and we can come to some kind of a solution to the problems in Afghanistan. Of course, all of this will be okayed by the government of Afghanistan.
Mr. President, yesterday Barack Obama spoke about the possibility to have a new state next year, the state of Palestine. Do you agree with Mr. Obama, and are you ready to support Mr. Abu Mazen in the direct talk with the Israeli government? Thank you.
We believe that we must allow the Palestinian nation to decide about its own fate. Neither I nor the U.S. President nor anyone else. Perhaps over the years such interferences have caused all the problems. We should let the Palestinian nation decide. The destiny of Palestine should be decided upon by the people of Palestine, and the Palestinian nation should act out its sovereignty in a free referendum, and in a free referendum decide on the type of its government. The experience has shown that plans in which the Palestinian people have not been present have not been successful. We are hoping that we're worried that these plans will go the same way as they have done in the past. More Palestinians die and some will be replaced. And we've seen this before. They don't need trustees. They can decide for themselves.
Michael Mazzocco as Press TV.
Mr. President, thank you very much for having this press conference today. I have a question for you regarding, there's been news reports of some type of direct communications between representatives of Iran and the U.S., and there's somewhat of confusion or fog around exactly what type those communications have been and if there have been direct communications at all. I'm wondering if you could clarify for us exactly what has taken place over the last few days here, if anything, between the U.S. and Iran. Thank you.
I don't have any sound here. Iranian president is having difficulty in getting a translation. We've had no sessions or talks or sit downs with the Americans. Of course, we are always talking to the American people. Every time, every year I come here, I visit various people from various levels of the U.S. society. In this trip, we have talked to four different groups of American people, and it is very interesting that many of them believe in the same opinion that a probe ought to be conducted into the 9/11 attacks. But there have always been precedent. Various messages have always been going backwards and forwards over the past 30 years between the two governments. But whether there have been talks specifically, no, they haven't taken place.
You said...
Your microphone, please.
Oh. You said like that some countries, if they had free elections, people would be able to decide. But in our country, your rivals, they were under house arrest. Also, you asked for free independent media, but also you arrest journalists, and many had to be exiled to other countries. And also you asked for equal rights between religions, but you don't give equal rights for the Baha'i people in Iran. So there is not some contradiction about what you say and what you do in your country?
خیلی متشکرم از شما.
Thank you very much. Well, our opposition are freer than we are. They can do what they like. They libel us. They say things against the facts and they walk around totally free. They're freer than we are. But I have no idea if a journalist or two journalists have left Iran or have not left Iran. They're not important. Iranians are always free to travel where they want to go to the world and choose a place to live. But in Iran, tens of thousands of journalists work and live. And they have hundreds of magazines and newspapers on it that are printed. News organizations, news groups, there are many. When we want to see the reporters, sometimes the halls that can house 1,000 people will prove too small. So we have to say that they're also reporters, but the opposition and the heads of opposition are living their lives, and they're free. But perhaps they feel that they can't appear in the people's gatherings, but that is not our problem. To do with religions that you mentioned, in our constitution has specified the legal religious representations and religions. Within the framework, there is total freedom. Not everybody can start up a religion. They can have personal beliefs. But if they want to publicize their beliefs, they have to act according to the constitution of Iran. In our constitution, the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians, and the Zoroastrians, and the Assyrians are considered official religions, and they have independent members in the Islamic Majlis of Iran. The Jewish people have 20,000 population in Iran, have one representative, but some areas in Tehran have to have 150,000 population before they can have a single Muslim representative. The Assyrians, the Christians, Christians have two representatives in the Majlis, and also the Zoroastrians, and they're not asked. Nobody asks anybody in Iran of what religion they are, but the official religions are recognized by the law.
اوهمان نیوز خانم روندا هوبن.
Yes, my question is that what's normally said by the U.S. and some of the other P5 members is that the sanctions do not hurt the average people and they're not intended to hurt the average people. And yet I have heard they do hurt the average people, and that that this activity of aiming something against the average people in the name of not hurting people seems to be a contradiction. Is there a way you can speak to the fact that if there's a desire for negotiations, there's a mechanism of welcoming the activities like Turkey and Brazil, rather than doing things and threatening the livelihood of the average people?
It was a very interesting point that you just said. They said that we don't want to pressure the normal people in Iran, but more than 90% of the sanctions against Iran is designed to put pressure on the day-to-day folk. Well, one of the representatives of the 5+1, P5+1, answered one reporter who asked whether the sanctions pressured the people, said our target is not the people, but we press the people until they press the government. This is the logic that we have to face today. Of course, the resolution was a very ugly thing. It was against the law, it was against justice, and we believe that the UN Security Council is shaky enough, and there is no trust in public opinion for the Security Council, and such actions will get rid of whatever trust may be left. We don't want that. We do not believe the prejudice formation of this UNS of the Security Council. But I'd like to tell you this: that these sanctions do not affect the people of Iran, because the Iranian people are strong. Our economy is self-sufficient, and we are reliant on our own resources and our own human resources. We have a very big country with thousands of years worth of history and roots, and it has gone through many, many major incidents. It can look after itself. Over the last 3 years, we've been under sanctions, but our progression has been multiplied many times. Our advancement is many times more than before. So the Iranian nation has made its own decision. But I'd like to conclude with this, and we go to the initial talk, an initial argument, that such behavior of colonialist behavior has reached the end of the road. They say themselves, they say we want to use the carrot and stick principle. It doesn't even occur to them that this is an insult to other nations. Yeah, it would have been all right when the cowboys roamed the countryside, but for dialogue among civilizations and governments that govern nations around the world, this era of such talk is out of date and it's ineffective. If they think they can use pressure to take away Iran's rights, I am telling them now that they will fail. And I have told them from the beginning that this is a futile method. They use basic talks, and they put their choices on the table, and we say to them, what gives you the right to express your opinions about our nuclear energy program? Who gave you this right? If all the choices, all the options are on the table, we'll let them stay on the table. And let's see what we can do with them. But if they accept justice and accept international law, the Iranian nation is cultivated, and it's logical and is ready to talk and to accept logic and law and progressive and constructive cooperation.
Ken Silverman.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. As we've seen over the past year, there have been a number of different events taking place towards denuclearization. There was a summit here that you attended, and so forth. And we also saw the Secretary General attend the ceremony in Hiroshima. What are your thoughts about some of these efforts for denuclearization, and would you ever have any intentions to go to Hiroshima or send a representative? Thank you.
We have sent already representatives to the Hiroshima on the annual commemoration to take part there, and we've always sympathized with the victims, and we've always declared our opposition to production and stockpiling of nuclear weapons. This year, a conference was carried out in Tehran. Many countries took part, scientists from many countries took part. A general resolve was created to for nuclear disarmament, and it showed itself in the NPT review conference, and we saw the non-aligned movement, the 77 group, the 15 group, the Organization of the Islamic Conference, stood united and asked and created major reforms in the NPT, and for the first time in a very transparent way insisted that those with nuclear weapon states should disarm under the supervision of the IAEA. Of course, we proposed in those conference that was not finalized in the conference. We asked for a time frame for nuclear disarmament, and we asked for an independent committee to inspect the process of disarmament. We will follow up the Tehran conference, and we hope that the nuclear disarmament will take place across the globe.
As Kyoto, Japan, Madam Yasuyuki Sakamoto.
Thank you for this press conference. We just had a simple question from Kyoto News. Iran has repeatedly criticized the Security Council for supporting the last round of sanctions, which, as you know, includes the country of Japan. So is Iran planning to change its relationship in any way to Japan, and could you elaborate on anything? Thank you.
Our relations with Japan are good, and it's historical, and there are no negative points in our relations, and our cooperation will continue. Of course, we understand the situation of the Japanese government. You're fully aware that the Japanese premier had to resign because he couldn't come up with his promise to get rid of the U.S. base on Okinawa. We believe he tried his best, but the situation of the Japanese people is specific, and we understand it. But we don't have a problem with Japan, and Japan doesn't have a problem with us. Our cooperation at different levels continue, and we are friends.
Mr. President, under what circumstances would Iran suspend or halt uranium enrichment? Will Iran stop enrichment if the West provides nuclear fuel for the Tehran reactor? Thank you.
Do you think the 20% enriched uranium Well, we've said before that we wouldn't like, we didn't want to start a new manufacturing line for 20% enriched uranium. Under the NPT, they should have provided the fuel. Unfortunately, they politicized the issue, and in order for us to carry on providing medicines for our patients, we set up this line. But you can be sure that if the fuel is provided, we could always look into stopping the 20% enriched production.
American hiker who was recently released, Sarah Shrood, and will Iran release the two remaining hikers back in Iran? Thank you.
You used your right of veto and asked two questions in one. Well, I don't have a problem with meeting with Ms. Sarah Short, but I don't have a problem. I've met hundreds of people.
Thank you. I'm sorry to pursue this question of negotiations, but can you tell me if you had any meetings?
Pardon.
So I continue, yeah. Can you tell me if you had any meetings with any members of the P5 this week to address specifically the resumption of negotiations with the P5? If so, what was the content of those meetings? And can you expand further on the October meeting that you referred to? The possibility of an October meeting.
Please pay attention. Some of the foreign ministers of the P5+1 group met with our foreign minister, with the foreign minister of Iran. Well, this is natural. Actually, in this trip, they had a meeting and talked about continuing the work. We hope that in October, of course, we're ready for dialogue at any time and interaction at any time, and we're hoping that P5+1 could be prepared for October, but we have announced our conditions for this.
Just follow up on the previous questions, and so you contacted the some members of the P5+1, and has there been any progress in terms of the resumption of the negotiation during your stay in New York? I mean, has there been any progress, and is it likely that you are having any reach conclusions during your stay in New York? And if not, what's actually hampering both Iran and P5+1 from having a possible resumption of the negotiation? Thank you.
Please pay attention. Other than the U.S., we have relations with the P5+1 countries. We have trade relations, economic relations. Our relations have not been cut off. Most of the time, at foreign ministerial level, there are meetings and they talk. The framework is what they announced and what we announced. Justice and mutual respect. We've always been prepared, but every round of negotiations needs preparations, and it's planned that they sit down in October and prepare for the dialogue to continue. Of course, they said that P5+1 were going to get their ministers round, even as I was in New York, but that proved to be just one person's opinion.
Mr. President, regardless of your position, can you envision a two-state solution in the Middle East? And on that issue, you are accused of threatening genocide against Israelis for remarks you made about removing or wiping Israel from the map. Others say you were mistranslated from the Farsi, that in fact you didn't mean that you meant that Israel should simply cease to exist as a name and it should be Palestine, an Arab-majority government with the Jewish population, a minority protected. You seem to not mind to be misunderstood a lot of times, and that raises tensions. I was wondering if you could take this opportunity once and for all to clarify exactly what you meant by that remark. Thank you.
We're very clear. We say, let's not interfere, not me, not you, not the U.S. government. Let the Palestinian nation decide itself. It is a nation. It has history. It has experience and culture. There are from people from different religions or that have always lived in Palestine. Let the Palestinian nation decide on its own fate. This is really clear and doesn't need a further explanation. I think it's other people's interference that lead to complexities. Let nobody interfere. Let nobody carry out a peace conference. Let the Palestinians choose. But let us all undertake to accept whatever the Palestinians choose for themselves. I think this is very clear.
What do you mean about the map? Your remark about the map. Do you want to see an ethnically cleansed of Israelis, or you simply want Arab
government? Seventy years ago,
in the geopolitics of the region, there was no occupying regime. It has been imposed on the people of the region. Let the people of the region decide what they want to do with this occupying regime. If you let the people decide, some people have said that if you let the people decide, there will be no Zionist regime. Well, the Palestinian nation should be allowed to decide, and we should respect that. Even if some people have to return to their own homes where they were before.
فقط دو تا سوال میشه آقای امیریان.
Only two more questions to be allowed now.
نفر بعدی شون پرسید دیگه.
از خبر از تلویزیون ام بی سی امریکا آقای عروضی.
Arozi from NBC TV.
Mr. President, you've expressed your repeated frustration with the IAEA recently. Are there any circumstances under which you would sever ties or relationship with them?
You mean reduce our relations with the IAEA?
Are there any circumstances that you would not allow IAEA inspectors into Iran anymore? Would it ever reach that stage?
No.
This isn't part of our plan, but we would like the IAEA to work absolutely according to the technicalities of its position, not according to politics, and the inspectors should act according to the rules and regulations. And they should. And that is all we wanted.
One more, please. یه نفر دیگه بگید.
فقط یک سوال دیگه از خبرگزاری الجزیره کاترین تور.
الجزیره سوال کرد. English.
Excuse me. Just the last question.
Al Jazeera English. I have my question, sir.
Yeah, of course.
Another, beside the first.
Thank you so much, sir.
Please.
You've made it quite clear that talks on the nuclear issue are something that you want to start again. But don't you think those comments that you made in your speech on 9/11, which many in the international community have described as deeply provocative, could damage any constructive progress in the near future?
Well,
did we say anything wrong? Was 9/11 events not responsible for hundreds of thousands of people dying in the Middle East? Have two countries not been invaded and occupied? Is the killing not ongoing? Do you think this is wrong in your opinion? Anyone who speaks should talk according to the wishes of the United States. We want to cure this problem from the root. It's very clear. What has this got to do with the nuclear issue? I don't understand what relation there is.
They felt you said something wrong. You upset them.
Well, they believe that they are perfect and they have no problems. But the moment you suggest there may be a problem, they get upset. But let me tell you something. They're accustomed to talking all the time, and they're not accustomed to listening. Once words are said in a different frequency, they get upset and they become perplexed. I believe this is assistance to them. I've tried to open the way for them so they leave Afghanistan and Iraq respectably. Is this bad? This is a very good assistance. It's totally humanitarian. It's assistance to the people of Afghanistan, Iraq, and it's also assistance to the soldiers of America and NATO who are getting killed, and also the people in the West who are paying the taxes while the soldiers are getting killed. This is assistance. I thank you very much. I thank all of you. I'd like to say two small points. I respect you all very much for journalists and for media organizations and for those who do work in the media organizations and as journalists. But during this trip, as one of the friends pointed out, I have talked only to part of the US media, and I know that journalists are in pursuit of truth and would like to print the truth. And I noticed that it's not only the reporters that make the decision. Others are sitting in such media organizations who decide what news should be published and in what way, and even what questions should surface. This must be interesting for you, that in all the interviews I've had with the media in the US, the questions have been similar, but the sequence has been different. I want those responsible to ask to not to pressure the reporters, journalists, not impose their will on media. And it's funny that all the questions they came up with was coordinated with the U.S. foreign policies. Well, can we somehow one day believe that there is freedom of speech and freedom of the media in the U.S. I love journalists. They undertake all hardships. They endanger themselves and they work hard. But those who are sitting behind doors in rooms and believe that they ought to direct public opinion, instead of acting as loudspeakers for public opinion, they want to build public opinion and manufacture public opinion. This is terrible. But I also believe that this era is at an end, that a political official should make a decision and use the publicity organizations to impose his will. That era is over. A bit like the Iraq War. The political authorities in the U.S. and its allies decided to attack Iraq. Saddam, who had been supported for 10 years by the same governments in its war against Iran and chemically bombarded Iran, and they cheered him on. In a few months, he was transformed somehow into this demon with horns, and there was publicity that the only way to save humanity was to kill Saddam Hussein and to destroy Saddam Hussein. Now, we didn't like Saddam Hussein and we don't like him now, but we're looking at the behavior of these governments. These governments use the media as a hegemonic tool, a tool to impose hegemony and dominance. This destroys trust in the apparatuses of the media. Look at the world today. The least trust is for the American media. Please pay attention. They say that the Middle Eastern countries are worried about Iran's nuclear energy activities. But when there is a scientific poll, more than 88% of the people of the region say that they agree with Iran's nuclear energy activities. That's what the media say, and this is what the people say. Well, you will kill trust in people, and it's like that now. And I don't believe inside America itself there will be much trust for the media. As soon as they start, people say, oh, there's a new plan, and there is a new adverse publicity. Let me give you an example. A lady was convicted of killing her husband in an Iranian court. This is in unison with a man. They made such a fuss, this media whose stances are the same as the U.S. foreign policy, that the only problem present on the planet Earth is the fact that this lady, and Iran has the worst behavior with the Iranian females. The Google, the Twitter was filled with issues, was talk about this. Well, that lady has not been convicted yet. She's been charged and she's going through the judicial due processes. But only last night, a woman was executed in the U.S. With a similar charge. So if a woman is executed in the U.S., it's good. But if a lady is charged with murder in Iran, it's a bad thing. Why is there a difference? In an interview with an Iranian reporter, I presented the list of 53 American women on death row. I said, well, why do So if a woman is executed in the U.S., it's good, but if a lady is charged with murder in Iran, it's a bad thing. Why is there a difference? In an interview with an Iranian reporter, I presented the list of 53 American women on death row. I said, well, why don't you print these? Is 53 people on death row a good thing? Is this human rights? But if a woman in Iran does the same thing and is placed on the death row, it's a bad thing? I believe this behavior is from the same philosophy of capitalism. If people have respect and are respectable everywhere. If something is bad, an act is bad or evil, it's bad everywhere. If the bomb is bad, it's bad for everybody. It can't be good for some people and bad for others. For people in Iran, even atomic energy is a bad thing. This prejudicial behavior has reached the point where they attack whoever they want, threaten all countries. Look at this. Some U.S. statements continuously threaten Iran with military force. Why? For what reason? Who the hell who are you? Who's given you permission? How much more do you want to fill the pockets of the capitalists, and when are their pockets going to be filled so that humanity can breathe a sigh of relief? I believe the era for such behavior has ended, that with fuss and hue and cry and repetition, and I was talking to a reporter, and he was saying, you have to do this, you have to do this. I said, well, are you issuing an order? Why are you issuing orders? You must be asking me questions. The reporter was, or the journalist was related to one of the American institutes. He was insulting and he shouted. And I said, well, why are you shouting? Why are you so one-sided in your work? You should publish but the facts. You should ask me questions and publish my words, not use speaking with me as a reason to publish your own point of view. Well, you're talking anyway. I believe the era has come to an end, and I want to ask the U.S. statesmen to stop looking at people and media as tools. Media must be respectable, must create relations between humanity, and they must trust the people and put out the facts and the incidents. Today we need peace and friendship, and we need justice, and we need a cooperation to set up peace and security and stability. And I believe that the media have a very sensitive and important role in this. I believe the pen and the camera and your language bring the message heralding peace, friendship and brotherhood. And I'd like to thank all of you friends and the people of New York and the police of New York. When we go places here and there, people have to endure a disruption to their daily lives, and the security measures that ought to be assumed. I'd like to thank them all. We really do not want when we travel, we don't want traffic problems to be caused for the people, but there is nothing we can do, and this is the decision of the authorities here. We beg God for all nations and people of the U.S. and the New Yorkers and you friends. We ask God success and health.
Well, Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, in that news conference, a few points that the President made in answering questions posed to him by the journalists present in that news conference. Let's begin with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He said the invasion of those countries on the pretext of fighting terrorism was a wrong move. He defended his call for an independent UN fact-finding mission into the September 11th attacks in the U.S., adding that Iran is, of course, saddened by the fact that people were killed on 9/11, that there are several unanswered questions, he said, about the events that need to be investigated. Iran, he said, is open to dialogue on its nuclear program based on justice and mutual respect, but he said the countries involved in the talks want to set the terms and results of the negotiations beforehand. Iran, he added, would like to have ties with all nations except the Zionist regime of Israel, in the words of the president, and that it was the U.S. that unilaterally cut off ties with the Islamic Republic of Iran. About the sanctions on Iran, those imposed by the UN Security Council and those unilateral sanctions led by the United States, he said 90% of those sanctions are affecting the lives of ordinary people in Iran, contrary to the claims of the countries behind those measures. He added, Iran's economy is prospering despite those punitive measures. The West's carrot-and-stick policy, he said, is out of date and inefficient. He said Iran hopes that global nuclear disarmament will happen sometime in the future. He went on to say that if the P5 plus 1, Iran will be interested in speaking with the P5 plus 1, provided that provide Iran with nuclear fuel. That, of course, the question related to the fact that Iran, whether or not Iran will halt uranium enrichment. He said that if those countries provide Iran with nuclear fuel, Iran will look into stopping uranium enrichment to the 20%. He said he didn't have a problem with meeting Sarah Shore, the American woman detained in Iran, but recently released on a $500,000 bail. Two other American nationals are still detained in Iran, and the issues surrounding that. On the question of what Iran will be doing if foreign troops withdraw from Iraq and Afghanistan completely, he said those countries are able to govern themselves on their own, and that Iran does not want to replace the occupiers of those countries to fill a vacuum and to share the shame. On the Israeli-Palestinian talks, the direct talks that have recently gotten underway, Iran, he said, believes that the Palestinians should be allowed to decide about their own fate, not the U.S. president or anyone else. And the controversy over a remark that the president made earlier on in his presidency about Israel, which he has since maintained that it was misinterpreted, he said that the existence of Israel should be decided on by the Palestinians and the Palestinians only, even if, he said, that meant for some people to go back home where they came from. And finally, he advised the media to tell the truth and not follow the lines of U.S. foreign policy. He advised the U.S. government, of course, to respect the media and reporters. That's pretty much what the president said during his press conference there in New York. We'll be bringing you the highlights of his news conference later on our broadcast right here on Press TV. Many thanks for watching. We'll be back in 15 minutes' time with our full bulletin of international news. Goodbye for now.
Yield because of this propensity of the Fed and to keep interest rates so low. Is this current rally in the bond market and in the junk bond market, is this sustainable?
Well, it all depends, obviously, on the economy. With all the things that you talked about before, you know, if the economy doesn't have legs, it's not sustainable. But, you know, when you get this sort of massive rally upwards, you have to wonder about its sustainability irrespective. You know, this sort of, you know, massive uptick is not it's above and beyond what we've ever seen, you know, in these sorts of situations at the beginning of a cycle. So, you know, with regard to junk, obviously, you know, if you're only getting paid 2.5%, 2.75% to stick with treasuries, and you are a pension fund manager and you have a lot of liabilities coming down the pike, and you've said in your statement that you're going to get 8% per year, you know, 2.75 is not going to cut it. You need to reach for yield in order to make sure that you get the returns that are necessary to pay off the liabilities that you have in your pension fund.
Right. Well, that reaching for yield, of course, is a problematic, dangerous exercise, has been for many years, because, of course, you might overlook the risks associated with that yield, and junk bond market has delivered a lot of corpses along the way. Managers have lost lots of money, and pension funds, of course, are not particularly known for their smarts, the pension fund managers, when they're buying bonds. But let me pick your brain for a second, and maybe you can help me walk through an issue here, which is played out on financial shows and networks all the time.